I love this feeling that the rage is really what motivated me to say to the doctor, you know, doc, I think I even smiled. I probably did because I smile a lot. I said, you know, doc, I'm going to take care of this myself. And that his reaction, this tall, kind of hefty Cuban-American man in Miami, 1975, he walked out of the office and he slammed a big, thick door, wooden door, while I was still sitting in that office. I pissed him off.
Welcome to the Radical Health Rebel podcast
with your host, Lee Brandon.
If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and a warm review.
Your opinions are important.
And your ratings help grow the podcast and help educate people to lead a healthier, more productive,
fulfilling and happy life.
If video is your thing,
please check out the Radical Health Rebel YouTube channel, where you'll find fun bite-sized clips from each episode.
And now, here is Lee, the Radical Health Rebel, with this week's podcast.
Jill Schneider, welcome to the Radical Health Rebel podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's great for you to be here. So today's episode is entitled Cancer, Healed Holistically with the Power of Rage. Today in the Western world, 50% of the population will contract cancer at some point in their life, and 50% of those people will not survive their diagnosis. We're led to believe that science and medicine are making great advances in cancer treatments paid for by the public via tax payments, medical insurance, and well-meaning charitable donations. However, the reality of the situation and the data doesn't back up this belief. The global cancer therapy market was valued at $158 billion in 2020 and is expected to reach $268 billion in 2026. The standard medical approaches to treating cancer are chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and surgery. And whilst in some desperate late stages, these treatments may have their place, they are known to cause and spread tumours in the body, and they do not address the root cause of the disease, which is why cancer often returns after a so-called successful treatment and often returns more aggressively. So I'm really pleased to have you, Jill, a cancer survivor, on the Radical Health Rebel podcast. So to kick things off, I'd love the Radical Health Rebel audience to get to know you. So can you tell us about your upbringing, your background, and also your own cancer story?
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. Well, I'm 77 years old. When I was 29, I had just returned from India, where I studied meditation, and I was told that I had malignant cervical cancer. I didn't feel sick. I just went for a checkup, and that's what the doctor told me, with one test, and then I had to take another test. He said, it's conclusively malignant. You've got to be in the hospital next week, and probably it's going to be a hysterectomy, cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. I have always questioned, okay, and maybe I didn't do great in school with grades and stuff like that, because I'm also very social and I like people, and I had many different friends growing up and in a suburb of New York City. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I have to say, all of my teachers were amazing. They were so highly educated. They were graduates of the best universities. And my friends, you know, were nice kids, you know. I didn't know anything about drugs in those years. I graduated high school in 62 and then went on to college and graduated college and became a school teacher. You know, my parents wanted me to be a little school teacher, and I liked kids. So I thought, okay, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Which has given me a wonderful foundation, because here are these little 6, 7, 8 year old children questioning everything.
Mm.
And that's our natural propensity, is to question and want to learn, because we want to learn. We want to learn more. And it's not about pieces of paper and pencils and pens and taking tests and all that. It's, I had them young enough that, and at a time when the schools were not so rigid. Okay. Mm-hmm. And an interesting story, when I was a school teacher, I got to train with two lovely, incredibly intelligent women from Leicestershire.
Mm.
Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they were my mentors. And they had a way of approaching a child, very much an individualistic kind of approach, where they would just say to the child, "How you doing? What do you love? What'd you do yesterday?" To get the children talking. And these were, you know, maybe kindergarten, first grade, mm-hmm. Not really readers yet. And then from there, they would take the child from his angle into some skills, just with some questions that they would ask him or her. And the child would begin to speak and to really be excited that somebody was interested in who they were and what they were passionate about. So that experience, which was a maybe 3 or 4 year training period, was an incredible foundation for me, because even as a coach now, I have a way of throwing a question to this person who has cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that question leads to an unfolding of the root cause of the cancer. So that is really my specialty. And I pretty much, that was my background. I'm also a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up a guitar in 1966, and I have not put it down. And now I have 5 of them and a recording studio. And so I'm writing about this story of how I healed myself of cancer. And it's called Cancer Holistically Healed with the Power of Rage. I love this feeling that the rage is really what motivated me to say to the doctor, "You know, doc," I think I even smiled. I probably did, because I smile a lot. I said, "You know, doc, I'm going to take care of this myself." And that, his reaction, this tall, kind of hefty Cuban-American man in Miami, 1975, he walked out of the office and he slammed a big, thick door, wooden door, while I was still sitting in that office. I pissed him off. I don't normally go around wanting to piss people off, but I told my truth. And I knew that I would be able to heal whatever they told me I had. I was in the process of studying Chinese medicine at the time. It was an introductory class. A man named Dr. Ralph Allen Dale was teaching it. He had just come back from China. He was very excited. We were putting needles into oranges. Mm-hmm. And then when I spoke with him about my situation, he introduced me to this wonderful, oh my God, a little Chinese man, a long gray beard. When that man opened up the door of his little clinic, I think he might have still been in his pajamas. I'm not sure. But he just looked at me deeply, right into my eyes. And he said, No problem. I fix. I don't think you spoke any more English than that. I got lucky. But I guess I also create that luck because I was just, whoa. The night of the day that I found out that I had cancer, I was performing on a radio station in Miami. And my lead guy, my partner, picked me up. Oh, how was your day? Oh, yeah, I found out I have cancer. He said, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'll be fine. But when I got to the studio, there was an opportunity for me to just sit and meditate, and I did. And I asked and I prayed. I prayed to that place within myself that is pure, that is full of hope, that is full of trust. And I said, God, please take this, any fear, any inkling of fear away, because I'm not going to sound so good. Mm-hmm. So there was the vanity first, then came the rage, or a little bit of both. But it's just been a great ride, and it has designed for me a life of truly caring about my body and truly being grateful. And one of the chapters in my book is called Gratitude for Cancer and thanking God for cancer. Most people would think, oh my God, she's really off the wall here. But no, I think we have to get to that point where that energy that has given us this breath, it's not a religious God that I'm talking about. Mm. I grew up Jewish. You never heard the word God used in my house at all. In fact, when I came back from India just before I got that diagnosis, my parents were not appreciating my ideas. And my speech about God, they didn't, you know, but I was feeling it. It's a feeling. It's nothing. It can't be intellectualized, and it's not a belief. Honestly, I don't believe in God. I have no belief in God, but I know a feeling. I know that feeling of being encased in a cocoon of love, in a cocoon of healing that I need every day. Every day I need this love. And you know what? I never get lonely. I live alone. I have a few friends. We hang out once in a while, 2-3 times a week. Most of the time I'm alone. I love my aloneness. That's where I can create without distraction. And being a musician and being a writer. And then I'm technical. So it's a good combination. And I don't have, I don't trust in the system of medicine because they're run by pharmaceutical companies. So I remember when they tested me, I was a, I never got a biopsy. I had 2 pap tests that were number 5. And number 1 was normal. But if you had number 5, you were up Schitt's Creek. Okay. Now, number 1 is not normal. Because I get calls from people and they tell me, oh, Jill, I'm a 1B, I'm a 1C. It's just like, oh, my God, the brainwashing. You know, to me, I'm a common sense kind of person. Those first few years, 10 years of teaching school with little kids, if you don't learn some common sense from them, then you'll be an idiot the rest of your life.
Something you said earlier on, is that you've always been someone who's questioned things. Where do you think that comes from within you? Where did you get that from?
I think it was natural, and I was allowed. It didn't come from my parents, okay? In front of my parents, I was a piece of furniture. Except my dad. My dad was silly, and he would play with me, and he would, you know, we were affectionate. But everything else was about the almighty dollar. And so I got very lucky because my parents were able to have a housekeeper who was a very interesting, uneducated woman, part Black, part Cherokee Indian, and part German Jewish. And she was with my family for 10 years. And she was in the room next to me from the time I was 2. And then she moved with us when I was 10 for another 2 years. And I really believe she was my maternal mother. She was my maternal, the real maternal mother, because my mother didn't have the mother instinct at all. So this woman was, she would like in our backyard, there was there was grass, a little garden. And then behind that were some reeds, okay? And it was at the beach. We were 2 blocks from the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean in Long Island. And she would just say, just go play. And I would go into, I was like 2, 3 years old, and I would just go into the reeds without any fear. I could hear her voice as she was putting clothes on the line. And when I got tired, I would just lay down like animals do. I would just put the reeds down, make a bed for myself, and take a nap. And that could be like an hour would go by. And she was humming. She'd always be singing. I got my music thing from her. And she was, she grew up in the Deep South, actually not far from where I am now. This is I'm on Cherokee land. So her energy is really strong. She's really happy that I'm living here. I'm also a medium, by the way.
So do you think it was your early interactions with her that gave you the
questioning, the freedom?
Yeah, the ability to question, you know, what might be considered authority, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But I you know, throughout school, I think I remember one incident in eighth grade when it was a math teacher, and I think I might have questioned a grade or something. And he sent me to the principal's office and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that was the only time in high school. And, you know, especially a doctor, you're not going to. But by the time I was 29, I also spent, you know, those were the years, Greenwich Village in New York, lived with all the, you know, got involved with artists and musicians and other teachers and interesting people in those years. Very interesting people. I mean, I saw Bob Dylan before he even made it. And then.
So sorry to interrupt. So the year you were diagnosed with cancer was 1975.
Yes.
What was kind of going on for you in your life from kind of 1970 until around that time?
It was a very tumultuous time. You know, we were wondering what the fuck was going on in the world. The Vietnam War, our leaders being assassinated, the great leaders, the greatest ones, the ones that we love the most. That it was a rough awakening to the reality that this is not good. This is not what we want, and we were rebelling. Okay, and I was just sharing with a friend who's a writer and very And she's also a shaman. And she's got many books. And I said, you got to just create a series and that kind of stuff. You've already written everything, so just put it in a series and market it. And I was telling her about a man named Carlos Castaneda. And Carlos Castaneda was this amazing man who wrote a huge series of books about his master, his shaman in Mexico. And those were the books we were reading. You know, at least people who went to college, people who were in the arts, people who, you know, wanted to grow.
Mm.
And I always felt, you know, living in New York, I mean, actors, actresses, you know, singers, dancers, artists, whatever, you know. I had one really incredible experience that I will never forget, and I do write about it in my book, was a friend of mine who was an actor. He said, you want to go to an acting class next Friday or something? I said, sure, you know, whatever, you know. And he took me to this man named Alec Rubin, who basically had us all lay down on futons on the floor individually, get into the breathing. And we started to individually go around the room with touching upon a sound that comes from inside that breath and just letting it come. And I would say about two or three, there were eight people in the class, and two or three people later, my mind came in and said, you better get the fuck out of here. These people are crazy.
You're listening to the Radical Health Rebel podcast.
Just a brief interruption to this podcast to talk about adult acne. Now, did you know that 40 to 54% of men and women older than 25 years will have some degree of facial acne, and that clinical facial acne persists into middle age in 12% of women and 3% of men? I know only too well the devastating effects that acne can have on your confidence and your self-esteem, and how it can easily destroy your social life, your career, and your relationships. I know this only too well because I suffered from severe cystic acne from age 13 to 31. Over an 18-year period, I visited my doctor on many occasions, and his only suggestions were acne creams, harsh cleansers, and antibiotics that weren't working and were actually making my skin worse. After 18 years of struggle and thousands of pounds invested in treatments that didn't work, through my professional education, I began to learn that what my doctor had told me was untrue, and that diet was directly related to acne, plus other factors such as food sensitivities, toxicity, hormones, and balancing the body's microbiome. Putting what I had learned into practice, I managed to rid myself of acne over 20 years ago and have been helping others to do the same for well over a decade. By teaching people what foods cause acne, what food sensitivities each individual has, how to optimize their detox pathways, how to reduce environmental stresses and toxins, and how to balance hormones, especially those related to the mTOR pathway, a major causal factor with acne, I've been able to help many other adults overcome their acne nightmare too. So if you would like more information on how to overcome your adult acne, please go to www.skinwebinar.com. That's www.skinwebinar.com, where you can also request an acne breakthrough call with me to see if you are suitable for my Eliminate Adult Acne coaching program, where you can once and for all learn how to overcome your adult acne. Now, back to the podcast.
Because that's what it sounded like. It sounded like, you know, this was an insane asylum. People were screaming and carrying on. And then it was my turn. Guess what? I was as, you know, fucked up as everybody else. And it just, woo, just came out. It was very humbling to know that. And then I had some work to do. And I continue. I continue doing. And that rage that came out of me, actually, Alex said to me, Jill, you sound like you were having a baby. And I was in my maybe 23, 24, something like that. And then so, I just had this kind of, you know, spontaneity about myself. And I would work for a few years and then I would just take off. And I didn't have any money, but I would have a little bit of money because I wouldn't have to pay rent. I wouldn't have to put gas in my car. I'd leave my car in someone's yard and just, you know, go off and, you know, travel either with, I'm never alone. People say, how could you travel alone? Well, I might get on a plane alone. I may land alone, but I'm never alone. And my father was this really friendly guy. He would talk to everybody as though he knew you. Okay. He just had it. And he never got past eighth grade. And he became a very successful manufacturer of toys. Okay. So, yeah. So I would just travel. I wanted to see the world. I didn't feel like I needed to get a degree in anthropology. It was, you know, I loved Margaret Mead and all those kind of people and, you know, would have loved to be able to get paid for traveling. And mostly my traveling was going to places where there were indigenous people, the real people on the planet.
So the early part of the 1970s, were you still working as a school teacher?
A little bit. I think I was doing some substitute teaching in Miami. but I was also living the year, 2 years, 3 years, the 3 years before that diagnosis, I was living in ashrams. I had met a teacher in India. And, you know, there were many people who followed him and we decided, you know, or he decided at that time that there would be an official ashram, which would house us. And it was fun. It was fun. It was a very disciplined life, an hour in the morning, first thing in the morning, you just do your stuff in the bathroom and then you sit down for an hour and you practice the techniques of the meditation and with a group. And then you go off to work. And then you come back and at the end of the day, and there was one woman or two women who were the cooks and great vegetarian food. And then we would spend the evening, a couple of hours, meditating and also having what was called satsang. It was not Hindu. It was, you know, it had that because the teacher was from India. So there was a feeling we would sing a little bit in Hindi. But most of the time there was no religion. It was not a religion based meditation. So I did that for 3 years. Actually, I stayed in an ashram in Bristol back in 73. And I talked my way in because there was going to be an opportunity for me to see the teacher again because he was coming. We had a festival. So I have skills. I know how to sew. I know how to cook. I'm a good cleaner, you know, the basics, because I was raised by this housekeeper.
Yeah.
So I had some real skills.
So at the point when you were diagnosed with cancer, what were you doing as a job at that time?
You know, I don't. Oh, yeah. Okay. I had a really rough job. I had gotten a job in as a activity director in a halfway house for people coming out of a mental institution. And they all smoked. You know, so that was disturbing to me enough, just being around the cigarette smoke. And I put up with it for 6 months until I found out that I had the cancer. And then I just said, I got to quit. You know, this is nothing. And I had no idea where I was going to get the money to pay my rent. But if I look back on my life, there's always been that question that comes up. Well, you know, there's something you might want to do, but you have to work. Well, maybe at this point in time, I knew I needed a break. So for 1 month, I had a little place, literally didn't even have furniture. I was sleeping on my sleeping bag. And I was eating, I did a macrobiotic program. And I also worked with the acupuncturist who gave me herbs. Pretty disgusting. He would roll up some things in his hand and just hand it to me to eat it. And today, the way people are so like freaked out, where does it come from? What's in it? You know what I mean? And I'm like, what the fuck? This guy is a healer. He's already told me he's going to fix it.
And so when you started the process of healing, you left where you were living, didn't you?
Well, after a month, I went to another doctor for a test.
Right.
I wanted to see what kind of progress was going on. So 1 month into that process.
So you were still in New York at this time?
No, I was actually in Miami.
In Miami, okay.
Yeah. And so I had moved to Miami because my parents were down there after I came back from India. It just, I liked the weather better. And I went to the doctor. He took another doctor. He took a test. It came back. It was 5. It came back 3. Okay. 3. So I said, I'm halfway healed. Okay. And he, of course, wanted to do a cryotherapy, which is some kind of process of freezing the cells. And I said, no, I said, I'm fine. So then I had a friend who grew up in the Caribbean on the island of Curacao. And he spoke 5 languages, a Jewish family. So he spoke Yiddish, Hebrew, English, Spanish. And one other. One other, I don't remember. But he said, let's go down to South America. Let's go visit Machu Picchu. Now, no one at that time knew anything about Machu Picchu. And his mother lived in Caracas. And then I find out the synchronicity is that my teacher from India was going to do a program in Venezuela. And his mother, Mark's mother, my friend, lived in Caracas. And then I had a girlfriend who was from California, but I had known her in Miami, and she came and we spent some time together doing some healing in the jungle of Venezuela after this program. So it was a 6-month journey. I had a backpack. I had a little cooking pot I carried brown rice with me. Seaweed. You could get beans anywhere. You could get vegetables anywhere. Maybe I may have had some of the tea that I'd gotten from the Chinese doctor. But in all of those places that we traveled through, Venezuela, and then we flew down to Lima, and then from Lima, we hitchhiked. We just hitchhiked. and you end up in you know, and even the buses, people bring their chickens and their goats. And so we used to call them chicken buses. And then we got to Machu Picchu. And it was holy. The frequency, it's a vortex, obviously. And there were no tourists. But there was also no bathrooms, no hotels, and no restaurants.
Mm.
But we managed. We stayed with the workers. There was like a flop house at the bottom of the mountain with cots. And we grabbed a cot. We had everything with us whenever we went anywhere. But at the end of the day, we would come back and just grab a cot. And it had an incredible hot spring at the bottom of the mountain, too. And we would just hitchhike in a truck. So this is rough traveling, okay? Mm. You know, for someone like who grew up in New York, Westchester County, in a nice house, new cars, country clubs. This was like a test.
Mm.
And I loved every second of it. And I wouldn't do it over, and I would never go back there. Today, it's like a circus. Mm. With tour buses and hotels and all the things that I would have absolutely not want to deal with.
Mm.
And I got to, you know, when I was there, I knew the energy from Peru in general and even Venezuela was a great opportunity for me to hold on to that pure and perfect energy within myself, which does all the healing.
Mm.
Okay.
So you were diagnosed in 75. You did a little bit of treatment whilst you were in Miami. You got the cancer had, let's call it shrunk from a 5 to a 3. What made you decide, right, I'm getting out of here?
I get these feelings every once in a while that I have to leave a location. And that was a really strong feeling. And then as soon as my friend Mark said that, you know, he spoke Spanish perfectly and he needed to go to Venezuela anyway to see his mom, it just, everything fell into place.
So it's almost like your intuition was telling you.
Yeah, my intuition very closely, pretty much second by second. In other words, when I wake up in the morning, I have a little routine, you know, getting myself showered and cleaned up and, you know, refreshed and comb my hair and do all that and have some breakfast. But then there's like, you know, certain things that I had made a list the day before. But I never know what I'm going to do first, second, or third. Mm. And sometimes I don't have a list and I'm thinking, okay, what's next?
Gotcha. So you left, you went to South America. How long were you in South America for?
About 6 months. A good amount of time. You see, I knew that I couldn't rest in the United States of America. And I did park my little VW at someone's backyard for those 6 months. And I would have to pay rent. I would have to have an electric bill, a phone bill. Okay. I'd have to work. How could I rest? And this is why so many people are so, they work for that health insurance.
Mm.
I don't use that health insurance. I don't use those kind of doctors. And I never really have. I mean, in an emergency, and I did have an emergency last January, a whole bunch of my friends, we got sick. And then I got really sick and I had to go to the hospital and find out what it was.
Mm.
It was, you know, it was pneumonia. It was bacterial pneumonia. And I needed IVs of antibiotics. And in those situations, please take me to the hospital.
Mm.
So Western medicine shines with emergency medicine,
yeah,
with orthopedics, okay, eyes, ears, you know, specialties like that. They shine. So, you know, and I write about that in my book.
I agree.
I'm sorry for the last 3 years of complete ignorance of these doctors and nurses vaccinating people and stuff like that. I didn't get vaccinated.
Mm. Okay, so you spent 6 months in South America. You were traveling. You were hiking.
Hiking, yeah. I hiked some really high mountains there. There's some serious mountains. At one point, I was chewing on ginseng, a ginseng root. That really got me to be able to hike. I mean, I was 29, you know, even though I wasn't, quote, an athlete. Here, I had already, for the last 3 or 4 months, you know, backpack. I'm trying to think if I had my guitar with me. I don't think I had my guitar on this trip, but wherever I went, I got a guitar. Everybody would just, you know, play guitar.
Yeah, so you're away for 6 months.
Yeah.
You were using herbs. You were hiking. You were traveling around. What else were you doing in terms of your kind of healing process?
Well, I would go into the, you know, when I would go shopping for vegetables, and I actually checked the year that Monsanto started to take over the growing of food in South America. And it was really just about the time that I was there. But I was in such remote places that I'm doing muscle testing right now. They were organic. The food was organic. Okay. Mm. I was safe. And I would go into the market, fabulous markets, you know, everything. And I was vegetarian, so I wasn't looking at the meat. But, you know, I just was able to, the only thing that I had to refresh at all when we were in Lima is to go to a health food store. I had to refresh the seaweed that I was eating constantly, either cooking or sometimes you get certain kinds of seaweed you can just eat raw, dried. And then there was always a little herbal shop. And the people who ran the herbal shop, the main person was a shaman. They knew their herbs.
Mm.
And I would pick up herbal tea in quite a few of these incredible. I mean, these are markets that take up 3 or 4 blocks, city blocks. And when you go in there, you're like, you could get lost. And in those years, you know, tourists, like, you know, hippies, we were little hippies. They were not trying to get us to buy. Mm. They were just people, and we were people. So that's another reason why I don't like going back to some of the places where I've been in my life. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just a different vibe. So I had the teas, I had whatever I needed. And then sometimes in Venezuela, actually, we met a wonderful family. We went to a town that looked like Bavaria. Now I know that that's where a lot of the Nazis went after World War II. And those are descendants of those families.
Mm.
But this one family was, she was from New Hampshire and he was from Venezuela. And he was in the construction business. His family did very well, and they had a beautiful home. And they had a store in a little town called Colonia Tovar. And in Colonia Tovar, we were just walking around. And we met them, and we were, like, talking with them for at least an hour, and they invited us to stay with them. And they had a baby. And at night, we would take – they had their whole backyard – they were in the mountains. It was 2 hours from Venezuela, from Caracas. And their whole backyard was covered with chamomile tea, chamomile plants. So we would take a whole bunch of these plants. And the baby had like a little swimming pool, which was good enough for us to be sitting around by the fire and putting our feet in hot water with chamomile tea. And my friend Mark had been reading a book by a French herbalist who had been the herbalist to Winston Churchill, and how the feet can absorb the tea better than even by drinking it. So we were doing foot baths every night. We were singing. We were making our own bread. And I made a very good connection with this couple. And then she followed Swami Satchidananda. Swami Satchidananda was the guy who opened up the Woodstock Festival. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, Swamiji is coming. It would be like at the end of our trip. I knew at the end of the 6 months. And she said, I would love for you, because I sing in Hindi one song. And she said, I'd love for you to travel with Swami Satchidananda and us as we move around a little bit. There was a 3-day program in Valencia, Venezuela. And so I got to hang out with Swami Satchidananda. It was divine. I watched everything he did. He never mixed cooked food and raw food. Now, he was vegetarian for sure, but no mixture of eating cooked and raw at the same time. He was 65 at the time. He looked 35. And his message was just so heartfelt, so beautiful. And he actually created in the United States a town called Yogaville. He was a great yogi. So, you know, things happen, you meet people, they take you in.
So do you have any thoughts on what caused your cancer?
Okay, that's a really good question. So when I was 12 years old, my mother just walked up to me and said, the housekeeper is leaving. She had been my mother, really, for 10 years. And that was it. And I said, why? And she said, we don't need her anymore. So I didn't know at the time, but, you know, a young girl, 12 years old, going into becoming a woman, it was I didn't realize it was so devastating. I basically, you know, went and distracted myself with my friends and stuff like that. I really did not grieve. I did not grieve that. And because I did not grieve that, I believe that it settled in that part of my body. And that was it. And then I was, my friend who is a shaman and a medium, who I met for the first time about maybe 15 years ago in San Diego. I walked into, well, no, actually, she lives in San Diego, but she has a sister in Miami. So I walked into her sister's house, and I was just about to sit down on her sister's couch. And her name is Dr. Carole Jean-Marat. And Dr. Carole, she's a gynecologist and a medium and a shaman and a writer. She looked at me and she said, Jill, what happened when you were 12 years old, something to do with your mother. Mm-hmm. She goes right in for the kill. She finds that trauma. And she's told me stories for these 15 or 18 years that we've been friends. So actually, that's how I was not scared when I had my first experience of speaking with someone's dead father. Because I knew that it's a veil. And I had just dipped into the other side of the veil and got information. So anyway, that deep root cause was the actual cause of the cancer.
The Radical Health Rebel
is also available on YouTube.
Find bite-sized clips from our episodes on the Radical Health Rebel YouTube channel.
Are you regularly suffering from painful bloating and wind that can be smelly and embarrassing? Are your bowel movements not as they should be, either constipation or diarrhea, or possibly alternating between the two? Do you find the pain is bad enough, but the bloating and cramps make you feel awful and are affecting your everyday life? Do you sometimes feel you can't eat properly because of the wind, bloating and pain? And has your doctor told you that you have IBS, but unable to help find you a solution? Do you feel right now that you simply don't know what's causing your symptoms and whatever your doctor has suggested hasn't worked, and you feel frustrated that you're still far from having a normal, flat, comfortable tummy? Have you invested a lot of time, energy, and money into improving your symptoms and don't wish to waste any more? Do you feel frustrated and depressed and don't feel like you can take part in all the activities you enjoy, and sometimes have to cancel attending events because of the way your tummy feels? Do you fear that if you don't get this sorted, you could end up with a much more serious gastrointestinal disease? Well, if so, what would help you right now is to understand the root cause of your digestive condition, rather than continuing to try to mask the symptoms with over-the-counter or prescribed medications. You need help understanding how factors such as nutrition, gut health, stress, and toxicology affect the digestive system and how to optimize these factors. You need someone who can advise, motivate, and support you every step of the way, someone who has walked the path before and taught many others to do the same. What you need is my Overcome Your Digestive Issues program. My Overcome Your Digestive Issues program can help you in the following ways. I will help you understand the root causes of your digestive problems and teach you how to approach the condition holistically via expert advice on nutrition and lifestyle factors. The Overcome Your Digestive Issues program will start by ensuring you are on the right diet for you based on your genetics or metabolic type, and one that avoids the foods that are known to exacerbate your condition. We'll go on a journey step by step, learning all the necessary lifestyle changes required to achieve a flat, comfortable, pain-free tummy. Each weekly 30-minute coaching session will include advice, support, and guidance specifically tailored to your needs and at a speed that is right for you. Once you're eating right for your metabolic type, you will begin to see changes in how your tummy feels, and we will also uncover all the necessary blocking factors that you may have, and you'll be taught how to reduce, replace, or eliminate all the factors that are causing your digestive problems. Ultimately, this program will enable you to achieve a flat, calm, and comfortable tummy every day for the rest of your life. For more information about how to improve your gut health and to claim a complimentary, no obligation gut health consultation, please go to www.bodycheck.co.uk, that's BODYCHEK, and fill in the request form at the top of the homepage, and we'll be in contact to arrange a convenient time. Now, back to the podcast. And that obviously took some time to manifest to the point where you got the diagnosis.
Yeah, yeah. So from 12, when I was told that her name was Benolia, when Benolia left, till I was 29, cancer takes time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because it's so emotionally connected and based on our deepest fears, our deepest feelings. And so I actually, even though the cancer, actually, I don't even know if the cancer's gone. I mean, the last time that I had an exam was when I was 46. I have not been to a gynecologist. I don't do mammograms. I think I did one once, and then somebody told me about the thermography, and so I did that once as well. Yeah. I just go forward. I just walk past fear. And when I do that, I am not ignoring the reality of the human body.
Mm.
But I don't want to be distracted by something that's going to make me afraid. And then that could actually, you know, you think about something long enough that you're scared of, it'll happen.
Yeah. Well, there's the nocebo effect as well, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're going to get sick, you can think yourself into being sick.
Absolutely.
Which so, I'm sure there was a lot of that going on in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. So I'm doing everything in my power to make sure that, I mean, I've got on my kitchen counter, which is right here, you know, probably 20 different supplements. And sometimes I take them pretty regularly. And sometimes I just say, okay, I'll take a break. I'm not doing any fasting at this point. I do drink juices and smoothies and things like that. But I had lost quite a bit of weight with that pneumonia situation. And my body decided. My body said, it's time for you to eat some animal protein. After 50 some odd years of being a vegetarian. Wow. And my friends were bringing me food, and one day I looked at a container that was put in the refrigerator, and it said hamburger stew. I mean, you know, for a 53-year vegetarian, oh my God, that was the best thing I had eaten. In way too many years, and I felt so much better. Mm. And then a friend of mine suggested that I get what's called an instant pot, and I make bone broth.
Mm.
So now I am enjoying the bones of really healthy cows because I live in the country and I have access to farmers who love their animals. Animals are free, and I can't buy from a supermarket. I can't.
Mm. Yeah.
No.
Good idea.
Even if it says, you know, non this and non that, I don't trust it. Yeah. So I'm eating lamb. Mm-hmm. I'm eating and the beef broth. My body told me. My body said, eat some meat. I gained 10 pounds. I've never felt better in my life. I needed those 10 extra. I was always like tiny. But when you get older, you don't want to be skinny tiny.
Yeah. You've got to keep your bone density up as well.
Yes. Yes. So, I don't know. I'm very, very grateful. I've been a massage therapist for 30 years.
Mm.
So I know my body because I massage myself. I mean, even when I wake up first thing in the morning and I'm halfway awake, I'll go to a part of my body and just, you know, start massaging it. And deep. I was someone who did the deep work. In fact, I was trained to do barefoot shiatsu by Shizuko Yamamoto, who brought barefoot shiatsu to the United States in the late 70s, early 80s, and I got a chance to even study with her. I had studied with a student of hers for 6 months and then went ahead and took a workshop with her in New York. And I still do that.
Mm.
Because I don't want to use my hands too much because I'm a musician and I'm a cook. And, you know, these hands, they have to really go last for the long haul. Yeah. My mother died when she was 99.
Wow.
Dad was 90.
That's a good innings, as we would say in England.
Yeah, yeah. Well, interestingly enough, my when I was living in Florida, my mailman also was my mother's mailman because we lived in the same community.
Mm.
And he said, you know, your mother had a home run. And so I'm still friendly with my mailman. We text all the time. Just a great guy.
So the question I asked you about what do you think caused your cancer? What do you think ultimately healed your cancer?
Okay. I would just say love, you know, and I've also studied Qigong and breathing exercises, and I still do them to this day. They help me to go to sleep. And last night, I remember finding I'm also doing something very interesting right now, which is a little controversial. It's called urine therapy.
Mm.
Okay. It's an ancient, ancient shamanic and Hindu. And it's something that shocks people, but there's a lot to learn there.
Mm.
So they talk about the belly button being a place where there are hundreds of thousands of nerves. So I thought, I'll just put my hand on my belly button. And when I do this breathing exercise, that will be the place that I'll breathe into and I'll breathe out of. Something simple.
Mm.
Simple but deep and very complete. And I did that also last night after I did the belly button. I went up to the thyroid. And then I went up to the pineal gland. These are ancient healing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And my body tell, you know, even if I haven't read about them, I ask that inner core vortex that I have inside myself, what else can I do?
Yeah.
What do you want me to do right now?
Mm.
Should I work on my book? Should I bake a cake? You know, what should I do?
Yeah,
what should I do with this incredible life that I'm given?
You're listening to your innate wisdom.
Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, at the time that I had the cancer, I guess I was single. I didn't have any children. I didn't have anyone else to think about. My parents were still quite healthy. And now today I do live alone. I'm on my own schedule.
Mm. That sounds great.
Yeah. But I drive myself too. You can feel the behind my, it's a passion. It comes from rage, but you take the rage, you figure out where that rage is really coming from. And then you kind of alchemize it to help you. It's like an intelligence. It's emotional intelligence.
Where is your rage coming from?
Well, as a woman, I believe it's coming from the womb. Okay? As a human being, it's coming from God. It's a gift. It's our major intelligence, protective device to let the world know you can't fuck with me.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to read my book, when I do actually put it, you know, on sale, they can't be people who, you know, can't handle expletives.
So
I got a New York mouth. What can I say?
So do you ever think your cancer will come back?
No. I think when it's my time, it's my time. I don't need to get a diagnosis. Mm. So I'll never know.
Yeah.
I don't need their diagnosis. I really don't. Unless it's an emergency, I needed to know, you know, when I went to that hospital for 3 hours, the emergency room, it was a country hospital. It was a beautiful place. They were so good to me and they took such good care of me. And the doctor was very nice. And they tried to give me a COVID test. And I said, don't go past here. I wouldn't let them go past here. And then she just took it out and that was it. So, it, you know, whether it came out, it was never meant to be used on COVID. So in the book, I also make a comparison of what's going on today. And, you know, what the cancer industry has created, a monster, a complete monster. And it's only about money.
Yeah.
And even the so-called, I did listen to one man speak, you know, I listened to, you know, other sides of issues. Mm. And there was one man, I don't remember his name right now. He studied oncology, but he also studied integrative medicine. And it felt like he was authentic, but I don't really want anything to do with, I mean, I respect emergency medicine.
Mm.
Okay. So that's the only thing that I would ever need. And to be honest with you, I'm careful. My mother would say, just know where you put your feet.
Mm.
Okay. And I practice that religiously because I'm on a hiking trail going up to over 6,000 feet. And I'm, you know, I use poles for balance, thank God. But every step is measured. Every movement of my body actually comes. I'm on a ball right now. If you see me moving like this, it's a respect for what the human body's capable of.
Mm.
I hope to be hiking these mountains at 90 or older.
Yeah.
If I'm careful.
Yeah. I mean, the last 20 years of my career, I've helped so many people get their physical body working again, because there is really nothing worse than you wanting to do something, but your physical body won't let you do it, whether it's pain or, you know, just physically unable to do something, you know, fitness, it could be a lack of fitness. You know, for me, there's nothing more frustrating than not being able to go and play tennis or go to the gym or go for a long walk. Or, you know, if I couldn't do those things, I'm not sure life would be too enjoyable, you know? So this
is
the only vessel that we have. You know, we do need to look after it. So Jill, got another question for you. What advice would you give to someone who, let's say, they've just been to see the doctor and they've just been given a diagnosis of cancer? What would be your words of wisdom for those people?
Call me. I will give them a free consultation to help them sort out the fear thing and the possible alternatives. I will give them clarity.
Mm.
Okay. You can't make a decision if you don't have clarity. And honestly, the idea of integrative medicine doesn't interest me. Alternative medicine is what I propose. But the idea of mixing the alternative with chemo, I mean, surgery is one thing. If it's an emergency situation and you need surgery, you get the surgery. Okay. And then they'll say something, oh, rare cancer, you know, you're going to need radiation. And I wasn't sure if I got the margins and all this kind of stuff. This, you know, fear mongering. And I just help people by even giving them a guided imagery to help them go in and have a talk with their own body and ask for the clarity to make the best possible decision for themselves and their family. And the other thing that I did not do when I had cancer, I never told my family. In fact, much later in my life, when I had just, I guess, you know, my mom was probably in her 80s or 90s. And I said something about, you know, I should write a book about the time I had cancer. And she said, what cancer? I'd forgotten. I'd never told her. They don't need to know. You don't need to scare them. You need to just go forward and take care of yourself like you've never taken care of yourself before. Yes, you know, if you have a supportive husband or wife, that's a different story. But they don't know. They don't know shit. Why should their fear add on to this situation? That's really important.
Well,
I mean, I told a couple of friends. They were supportive. In fact, one woman, Sarah, she went ahead when she was 55 years old to study acupuncture because I had turned her on to the doctor that acupuncturist I was using then back in 75. And then, you know, 10 years later or so, she ended up becoming an acupuncturist.
What's quite interesting is, you know, when I asked you the question, what do you feel healed your cancer? The first thing you said was love, right? And then what you've just said is don't add to the fear by telling those around you. Well, some people would say that the opposite of love is fear. Right.
The opposite of love is fear. Well, I keep it in a completely singular category, love, because it's love coming from the divine. That love, that all-encompassing love that created me, that gives me a breath. It's not romantic love.
Yeah.
But that divine love turns into us having self-esteem and self-love.
Yeah, I guess the point I was trying to make was if you're full of fear, it's much harder to receive love when you're in a position of fear.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've worked with a lot of people. One woman actually... With quite a few people with cervical cancer, because they found me online many years ago. I used to come up because I ran retreats, holistic healing retreats for years in Florida. This one woman came, and as soon as she got into her room, I met her there, got her settled down, and the phone rang, her phone. This was when they were. So it wasn't that long ago, sometime maybe in the early 2000s. And it was her mother. And she was so annoyed at her mother. I can't talk right now. And that was the, you know, root cause. Something happened between her and her mother. So I had to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's going on with you and your mother?
Mm-hmm.
And this gal, you know, realized that, and the mother, you know, cervical cancer, all of that is so highly charged that we have to look at that and work through those issues.
Mm.
So I'm kind of a Jill of all trades.
Mm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
I even fixed disposals.
So Jill, this has been a really great discussion. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom.
Thank you.
And thanks for offering the audience the opportunity to call you if they, you know, if they felt they needed to.
Free consult.
And how's the best way to contact you?
Probably my email, so we could send, we could set up, which is Jill@JillEinSchneider.com.
Great. And I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yes. So put that in the show notes. And if somebody wants to contact me, I'm fluid in terms of times. I'm open. I'm kind of a night owl. And I look forward to working with any, you know, any of the people who follow you and other people who might just happen to find me on this incredible platform. I really thank you so much, Lee.
Oh, my pleasure.
And so, and I found you because I was looking for a radical, radical podcaster.
And where else can people find you online?
Well, I am on Facebook, Jill Ein.
That's A-Y-N.
Yeah, A-Y-N. I'm named after Ayn Rand, who was kind of a revolutionary woman who wrote some interesting books back in the 40s. And my mother, everybody else was Jill Ann or Barbara Ann or Linda Ann. And my mother got a little creative and she was reading Ayn Rand's many books. So.
And what about your website?
It's JillEinSchneider.com.
Okay, great, great.
Or it'll either come up also revolutionaryhealer.com.
Yeah, I'll make sure that's all in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. And this has been a great, you're really good at what you do. And
thank you, Jill.
Wonderful outlook and really good with the electronics and all that technical stuff. And
you got to be these days.
Huh?
You've got to be these days.
Yeah, you do. You do. And sometimes I get a little frustrated and then I go to Google and I ask, how do I do this? And it always seems to work out one way or the other. And my book should be coming out in some way, even if it's the ebook, I would say in 2 or 3 months at the most. I'm still not, you know, sure about a few things, but I think today might be a day that I'm going to do the copyright. I have finished it, but it's, I'm going to copyright it. And actually I better finish it a little bit more before I do the copyright.
Just let me know as well when it comes out and I can let all the listeners know.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be fabulous. And so, I'm just excited that, it's going to be actually my publishing company is called Revolutionary Healer. So I plan on a series of kind of wild woman books. I don't think I can help myself. And they're all going to have my music.
Mm.
Okay. So right. If anybody, I definitely will send you one specific link where people can go directly to my music webpage. And here on SoundCloud, my songs. I have 8 songs that are going to go into the book. unless some more money comes along and I can afford to record a couple more. I have a recording studio in my master closet.
Good for acoustics.
Yes. And when I got to this condo, when I bought it, it was filled with blankets, pillows, you know, all nice kinds of things that I put up on top of that closet, and it insulates it really well. And it's quiet awesome. Here, especially in the winter. I'm in a community, and it's a condo in a community, but very quiet, quiet enough for me to do the voice work, which I plan
Sounds
on
great.
Doing. Yeah.
Sounds
relatively
great.
Soon.
So, Jill, once again, I'd just like to thank you so much for taking your time out today to share with the Radical Health Rebel listeners and viewers. And to all the Radical Health Rebel tribe, if you know someone who would benefit from watching or hearing this episode, please make sure to share the love and forward it on to them. After all, the mission of this show is to help people lead a more fun-filled, healthy, productive, fulfilling, and happy life. So that's all from Jill and me for this week. But don't forget, you can join me same time, same place next week on the Radical Health Rebel podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Radical Health Rebel podcast
with Lee Brandon.
You can find Lee at
www.bodycheck.co.uk.
That's bodycheck.co.uk. Please hit the like button and share on your social media.
And with someone you feel will benefit from watching this episode.
So together, we can help them lead a healthier, more productive, fulfilling, and happy life.